All right, we're about ready to start. All right. Hi, guys. My name is Namir Pook. I am a student of Dr. Barbara Robbins in her field research studies class, and I designed this page of the OER on refugees. And I thought I would get more interviews for you to listen to and get a better perspective on the effects of war. In the podcast, we have the experiences of war directly and the experiences of war indirectly. So I thought I'd get the viewpoint of someone who has both sides, who has went through both sides of that with parents and experiencing war in a different country. I'm sitting here with my brother, Bun Rick. He's 39 years old. Let's get started. If you wanted to do an introduction, say a little bit about yourself.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bun Rick. I'm Nyamar's eldest brother. She mentioned already I'm 39 years old. Thanks for having me.
All right, awesome. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your experiences before you felt the effects of war and where that area was from? I know as your sister from South Sudan, but can you tell us what life was like before war started there?
Let me go back to my earliest memory. It was one of my core memories. It was of the Nile River back then, and some people still practice it now. Of course, the country was Sudan then, but it's since split into Sudan and South Sudan. Anyway, so there was a tradition where if you wanted your child to learn how to swim, you take them to a body of water. Usually it's the Nile River because that's the largest one we had over there.
Mm-hmm.
There are several other ones like the Sobat River, but the Nile is where we live by. Then you take your child and you just place them in the water and they learn how to swim. Sometimes the parents would use tough love to get them to learn quickly, so they would throw the child in the river. Obviously, not too far, but just enough to where they figure out how to swim real quick, long enough to be able to swim, make it to shore. So that's my earliest one, being thrown. I remember hitting the water. I held my breath. I opened my eyes, and I remember the murky water, and I just kind of sat there for a minute like, wow, you know, my wonder of the world as a child, if you will. And then, of course, my dad grabbed me out of the water, and I remember him laughing about it. Those were the more peaceful times I remember. And then, of course, there was moments where there would be a lot of chaos, but at that age, you don't really understand what's going on. One minute, you're with adults, and next minute, you're moving somewhere. And just like in that show, what's the dog Snoopy, Charlie Brown?
Mm-hmm.
There's always the scene where the adults are just long legs and they're going wah, 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 wah. So imagine that, except instead of saying wah, 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 it's like frantic wah, 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 and legs running everywhere and being scooped up and going.
So was this before the war started? Or was
was like the progression of realizing that there was war happening.
Because,
you know, at that age, what is war, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So then we moved to, I remember it was Khartoum. That's when I started realizing there was something very wrong and that there actually was war.
Mm-hmm.
Khartoum was the capital of Sudan when it was still a united country. And of course, Sudan is a Muslim country.
Mm-hmm.
So we being Christians, when we moved over there, we were ostracized and persecuted still. So I remember I was kind of like an outcast child, if you will. My family, at least my siblings, my mother included, were half and half on both sides of the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So beginning with my granddad, one granddad was Muslim, the other was Christian. My father's side was Christian, mother's side was Muslim. But we lived in the Muslim community. We lived in a Christian community.
Mm-hmm.
I said that, right? Granddad on one side, Christian, mm-hmm. the other. Okay, just double checking.
Yeah.
So, long story short, even though we were within the Christian community, because of the conflict, who were still ostracized. As a result, I didn't really have playmates, if you will. You know, parents kept their children away, like, oh, we don't talk to Bun. He's
he's a Christian.
He's a Christian. Their father's a Muslim, or their grandfather's a Muslim. You know, just horrible things you would expect of war.
Mm-hmm.
And my adjustment was I had a puppy I would always play with. He was my best friend. My sister was my best friend, but she was being taught how to be a woman from a young age and things like that. So I'd often find myself alone. And so it'd just be me and my puppy relaxing, walking the dusty streets of Khartoum, watching people go by, looking at cars, wondering how those things work. So then one day I was cornered by this one girl. She had a hijab on, and one of her siblings. So there's a game kids play in Africa where you roll a tire. So they took the tire and they thought it'd be funny to roll over my puppy. And so as soon as I heard my puppy squeak, oh, I lost it.
Oh, wow.
So I pounce on her. I give her a few shots. You know, I don't condone violence, but, you know, as a kid, you know, it's your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Her brother jumps in. I gave him these hands too, if you will. The other sibling came in. I gave him a piece of my mind as well. Their father stepped in, and their father was a police officer, Muslim police officer from the north, mind you. So he knew of who all was in the area. He grabbed me by the collar, picks me up, and, you know, and I remember looking at his face, and I still remember the mustache he had and his, like, 5 o'clock shadow. And I was like, uh-oh, there's no way I'll be able to take this guy on. And he throws me inside the gate. He gets one of the biggest sticks I've ever seen. And he says, let me show you what we do to Christians. And then he proceeds to beat the living mess out of my shins. Like, and I wanted to cry so bad, you know, I'm a child. But the anger took over me. I was like, you're doing this to me because I was helping my puppy and I'm a Christian. And that's, at that moment, I think that's when I realized that, yes, this is what war is, if you will.
Okay. So was this conflict about Christianity and Islam?
Yeah, it was a religious war. Quick historical background. During the colonial times, the British Empire favored the North for many reasons. Part of it is because it was relatively easy to develop. Very dry land, grasslands at worst, you know, it doesn't really rain too much. Had a big river, you know. It had deep history because Sudan actually has the most amount of pyramids. People think of Egypt when they think pyramids. No, Sudan is where they're at. So anyways, it was easy to administer. The British Empire had a history with Muslim empires from the past. You know, go back, look at the Crusades, some of the negotiations that were made by the European countries and Muslim powers. So all of that factored in. Luck was favoring the North. The South, at the time, were converting to Christianity, but some people still held on to animist beliefs. Of course, we were pastoral, so we didn't stay in one spot, which is very difficult for anybody trying to administer a city. People keep moving. You can't get the census. Taxation, forget it. You can't get any workers.
Right.
And then the weather was just very, very, as one colonel told me back in the day, very terrible. And this is a seasoned veteran. He hated it. For one, it always rained. You never know when it's going to stop. It flooded when it wanted to. You had the wild animals to contend with. And then on top of it, the area we lived in, or historically lived in, is 200 miles of swampland. So imagine moving lots of people and equipment. It's a nightmare. So the British just didn't want to mess with it.
Sure.
Naturally, the North, who are Muslims, developed faster. Obviously, they've had their conflict with the British because British were Christians. So after the Brits left, all of that, you know, was pretty much a powder keg, you know, waiting to be ignited. And that's what happened. So the North tried to go through a process of Arabizing the South and turning them into Muslims. And of course, that's where the conflict
started.
Yeah. Okay. You could say right when the Brits left, but it was something that was off and on for hundreds of years.
Okay.
Probably even well before Islam and Christianity was established. It's just it had a snowball effect.
Okay. Into that. So when our family went, where were they staying before they went to Khartoum?
Before they went to Khartoum, we were staying in Nasser, which is where Mama and Baba, our parents, they met.
Mm-hmm.
Our grandparents on Baba's side met in Nasser. And actually on Mama's side, the grandfather, he was a high-ranking officer who was Muslim.
Okay.
And he, I'll tell you this real quick, he was given an order to go destroy a village that's not converting to Islam.
Mm-hmm.
That was what he was supposed to do. So he shows up, sees my grandmother, they fall in love, and here we are today.
Here we are today.
So, yeah. So that's a... We've always been around Nasser area, except, of course, for Grandpa on Mama's side. He's from the north. I want to say they go by the Bagara tribe.
Mm-hmm.
They're called Nuba, but some of them consider themselves Arabs, so we call them Arabs as well.
Okay.
So then from Nasser to Malakal. Malakal is right at the border of the north and south. Very... very strategic location for the military and also for business and trade. It's a big trade route.
Mm-hmm.
The river is right there. It's right when it's transforming from terrible weather land into dry land, so the land is very forgiving. And that's actually where I was born. It was on one of the military outposts by the Nile River.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yep. So
that's really interesting.
Yep. So we lived there for a little bit. You know, of course, as the war, everybody was a freedom fighter or guerrilla or everybody contributed to the war. Mm-hmm. There was no way nobody could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to. That was survival at that point. So Baba took us from Malakal. It was a military post. Granted, it was secure, but still it kept getting attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed to go to school also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, investment in school is always a good thing.
Right.
It's kind of where we get it from too, by the
way. Right.
So Baba would travel. Then one day he actually he traveled. He gave up his plane seat to somebody. The plane crashed.
Hmm.
Yeah. So he took that as a cue to leave Malakal.
Mm-hmm.
And then this from what I've been able to get from the aunties, because I want to know our history too. So from there, then Khartoum, and then that's where that incident occurred, where I understood, oh, we're at war.
Their first,
yeah, that was instance the first
of when you understood. Okay.
And then yeah,
so I mean, with even with this experiences where you woke up to war basically, mm-hmm. Did Mama and Baba try to explain any their reasoning behind moving the family from Malakal to Khartoum, or what was going around? Was there any type of explanation to you and Book about what was happening at the time?
The way they explained it, because, you know, you got to explain it to a child in the way a child understands it, is they'd always present it from the religious point of view.
Mm.
Like, God is going to help us through this, which ended up being true.
Mm-hmm.
Or things will get better. That's what Baba would always say, and his word always delivered.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how tough it gets, I remember he'd always say, you know, things will be all right. I remember one time we were going, there was by the river, and the water was just murky. And me and Boop, oh, we didn't want to touch it. We're kids. Mm-hmm. We're like, ew, that's nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Baba's like, well, you need to drink water. He's like, how about this? Why don't you pretend that it's tea with milk, a very popular drink. So, and you know, we're kids. We're like, whoa, mind blown. Mm-hmm. Tea with milk, of course. So... Mm-hmm. So just little things like that. Their narrative was, they wouldn't. It's not that they would shelter us from it, but they would use language that made it less traumatic, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how they guided us. And then of course, just because we were children didn't mean we couldn't help out.
Right.
Matter of fact, young boys were expected. Normally around the age of 5, you go through some sort of military training.
Mm.
So you get taught things like how to toughen up. Like one thing to do is there'd be food cooked and it'd be hot. mm-hmm. you expect it to down it quick. Not because you know you're in particular danger at that moment, but it teaches you, like, hey, when it's go time, you got to eat and go. This is also a very common practice. When I found out years later when I joined the military, you down your food quick and focus on the right. mission. Mm-hmm. Then as you get stronger, you get taught weapons. You start with a knife, how to wield it, how to sharpen it. And then after a knife, you move up to bigger things. And if you're strong enough, you get a firearm. Mm-hmm. I remember my very first one, it was a pistol.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
How old were you there?
Oh, my gosh. This was in Khartoum. So it'd have to be, what, from 85? Between 5 and 6.
Yeah, 5 and 6, and you were issued a pistol. Between 5 and 6,
yes, wow. Because 91 to 92 is when we started going to Egypt. This was in Khartoum. Mm-hmm. So it was before that time. So it put me at about, what, so 85. Yeah, about 5 and 6.
About 5 and 6.
1990 and 1991. I hated it. Oh, my gosh, I hated it. It was heavy, we're in the desert, so mm-hmm. it was hot. It burned my hand. Mm-hmm. Then I try to pull it. It's like a bang.
And did Mama and Baba sort of, like, have this expectation that yep. you would be trained with your peers?
Yep.
And so, I mean, what were Mama's reservations about you having a pistol?
Everybody was contributing. So like right now, if you go right now in South Sudan, this is 2024, right? At any given moment in time, from the conflict that ended in, what, 2005, mm-hmm. for that particular conflict, you'd be surrounded by the group that surrounds you would be composed of at least 88% war veterans.
Oh, wow.
No matter the age.
Okay.
Obviously, the babies, yeah, mm-hmm. but... Mm-hmm. So, everybody had to contribute. I remember one uncle, his training for me, if you will, was he was like... He wasn't a witch doctor, but mm-hmm. he knew local medicine. And he kept skulls mm-hmm. and the skeletons of... Mm-hmm. you know, people, victims, whatever it was. And that used to scare me to death. Mm-hmm. If I saw the skull out, I would run away. And they're like, don't be scared. You mm-hmm. know, I'm a kid. I'm mm-hmm. shaking like, is this normal? Mm-hmm. But anyways, yeah, so that was their expectation. Not because, you know, I had to do it, but because it's a matter of survival. We had to survive at that point.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's
so
fair.
That's why.
And, so I
mean, it was bad.
What years, what year was this, like... So when you moved to Khartoum, what year was that?
Khartoum would have been, before 91, 92, for sure.
Before 91, 92.
Yeah, so it put me at late 80s.
Late 80s, yeah. Okay. And then we went to, or the family went to Egypt.
Several times. Okay. The first time I remember, and of course it might have been maybe after the first few times, but we took a boat. I think it was Port Sudan. Is it the Red Sea?
I think so. I'm not very good with the geography.
I want to say it's the Red Sea. You know what?
Let's look it up.
Fact check myself. Yeah. Hold on one second. I want to say it's the Red Sea, but you know I don't really look it up too much. Yes, Red Sea. Mm-hmm. So we took a boat from Red Sea, and along the way we'd pick up stragglers, soldiers that had their units destroyed. Mm-hmm. I mean, these were young teenage boys mm-hmm. looking back now. And they'd be like one or two, some would be injured, and they'd enter the boat. And Mama was like the equivalent of the nurse because there wasn't any doctors around like that. Mm-hmm. And she'd treat them, and I'd always, you know, they'd always try to encourage us and stuff. Like, hey, kid, you know, mm-hmm. don't let, you know, we kind of lost this little battle. It's okay, we're going to win. And they were like, they were all about it. I mean, mm-hmm. they were injured. Some of them had bandages. They're like, don't worry, kid. We got you, you mm-hmm, know. Mm-hmm. So we took that. Then we came back several times, from what I remember, to Khartoum. And I remember one time we somehow got split up. I don't know the exact details about how it happened, but I remember it was Mama, Baba, Nyan Chiu, me and Guamar. By this time, Guamar was born. Mm-hmm. And somehow, Baba was able to find taxis. First, I remember there was a train we were taking. Mm-hmm. Then we were in the Sahara Desert, and we would take taxis. So we'd go to a town, mm-hmm. get another taxi, another town. Looking back, that was really risky. Mm-hmm. Even by today's standards, if you mm-hmm. try some, because some people still use that method. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes what will happen is you can get robbed, all your documents get taken, your mm-hmm. money. Or some people, for whatever reason, sometimes racism, sometimes frustration at immigrants, the narrative, all immigrants are all taking the jobs. Yes, that actually exists outside the U.S. too. Xenophobia is mm-hmm. unfortunately a reality mm-hmm. many people live through. Mm-hmm. But somehow Baba was able to pull it off, and we ended up in Egypt before you know it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yep, so.
So then that was 90.
That would have been, what, 91?
91.
Baba was born when?
And her birthday is May 15th, 91.
Yep, that would have been it, 91, yep.
And
so, yeah, around 91.
From my recollections of what Baba tells us about the experiences that you guys had before we went to the refugee camps where I was born, mm-hmm. Nairobi, was that him and Mama were separated at the time.
Yeah.
The time that you were stayed in Egypt. Where was he? Like, what was he doing? Was he fighting the war or was he incarcerated?
Baba was part of the war effort like everybody.
Okay.
Same with Mama.
Mm-hmm.
So ideally, when you're with your soulmate, the person you love, you always want to stay together.
Mm-hmm.
But because of war and also because of cultural and traditional limitations,
mm-hmm.
oftentimes the only way that they could be the most effective for their family and community was to split.
Mm.
Mama was very knowledgeable, and you probably know she mm-hmm. has all of these
yeah.
quirky remedies.
Right.
Like, what? How did you?
Yeah.
How does that work, you know? So she was the go-to person, and mm-hmm. she doesn't back down.
Mm-hmm.
She was not scared of anybody. So people would always go to her because she was very, very charismatic, had a lot of technical expertise,
mm-hmm.
and she was good with, you know, keeping the spirits up. Baba was highly educated.
Mm-hmm.
He knew the law. He somehow knew how to get around,
mm-hmm.
like I just gave the example.
Mm-hmm.
So he would go help out in the war effort, and he was the most effective in a role that wasn't limited to being a regimented, file and rank soldier.
Okay.
That's the initial route he wanted. But, you know, they say behind every great man is an even greater woman.
Mm-hmm.
Mama advised them against that. She said, you know what? She's like, okay, you can go. But what are you going to do with me and our daughter, Nyanchia, at the
mm-hmm.
time? This was before I was born. So, you know, mm-hmm. Baba being, I imagine, the romantic
yeah.
man
yeah.
he is, like, I'll stay for my wife and daughter. And it turns out that's actually where he was most effective at.
Okay.
So he would contribute. He didn't get into details. But I do remember one time him and his group of fellows, they
mm-hmm.
got arrested for they were fighting the Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
They were part of the mix, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Islam, Muslim Brotherhood. So they somehow got him arrested, got him convicted under wrong charges. And they were detained for... Oh my goodness, I just remember Mama was always stressed about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then one day they were released, randomly. Just randomly,
oh,
they
wow.
got the wrong people.
Oh wow!
So that's kind of why they were always split up. Is the war was their roles in the war had they
mm-hmm.
had to split up. Oftentimes they didn't want to, but they had to.
Okay, so I'm getting a clearer picture of kind of what your childhood was shaped like. By the effects of the religious conflict out in Sudan. Can you paint what it was when you first came to America? Technically you were labeled as a refugee.
Yeah.
But what was that feeling like coming out of a place where there was a lot of trauma, a lot of fighting, a lot of horrors and things like that?
You know, I can't speak for everyone, and maybe it's because of my background.
Can you explain your background a little bit more?
Okay, so going back to the two grandfathers, that has always been a narrative of mine to this very day. If I choose one side or the other, that automatically meant I'm fighting the other side that's composed of family. If I wanted to blend in, I couldn't. Somebody would always call me out. Oh, you're Christian. Oh, you're Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost guaranteed. So every so often I'd have memorable childhood friends that I'd hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
My earliest one was this one guy from the north. Was it Yusuf? I want to say Yusuf. He used to stop by at the house. He knew we were Christian. Mm-hmm. He'd stop by at the house and he'd be like, "Hey, man, Kev, I'll look to mom in Arabic." Mm-hmm. And we'd play and we'd talk, you know, like little children. And he'd always tell me, like, excuse me. Mm-hmm. He'd always say, don't worry, brother, you know, mm-hmm. everything is good. I didn't think of that. No, I didn't think fine. That memory would hit me like that.
No, that's fine.
I still remember. And one game we'd play is we'd always try to, like, catch the, because, you know, they'd farm doves and pigeons over there. So mm-hmm. we'd always try to catch them and take mm-hmm. them back to their owners. And, you know, they'd mm-hmm. give us candy or whatever. But that's one. And then in the refugee camps, same thing happened. So one of my friends was an actual child soldier who got caught. Mm-hmm. The reason he got caught is he was really young, man. This guy couldn't have been 6-7 years old.
Oh, wow.
Small kid. Mm-hmm. And I'd never get picked for a soccer game. I already knew it. I'd show up to the game. I was probably going to get picked last or not at all. So I'd always like, yeah, I'll just watch him play. Maybe I'll kick the ball when it goes out of bounds. Mm-hmm. So then there's this kid and he smelled bad. His shirt was torn. So I'd hang out with him. And at the time, when you had to use the bathroom, you had to go out in the woods far. Mm-hmm. We always stress cleanliness, but in the wild there's animals, so you always go in pairs. You can't going by yourself is too risky. Mm-hmm. If one of y'all get caught, the other can go get help. Mm-hmm. So, looking back, and pardon the graphic nature of this, but you know when we'd go use the restroom out in the wild, I always noticed like when he's pooping, like. It's almost like some of his entrails would come out. So I was like, you know, I'm a child. I didn't mm-hmm. understand. Mm-hmm. Again, pardon the graphic.
No, picture. No, it's fine.
I'd be like, you know, I'm a child. I'm like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, cool. Like, how do you do that? You know, children can't process these things. Mm-hmm. Come to find out, he actually got caught and raped.
Oh, wow.
And he had a rectal prolapse. And, you know, being in a refugee camp. Mm-hmm. No surgeons. Matter of fact, it wasn't even a refugee camp. Now it's a city, a bustling city. It's called Dadaab. Mm-hmm. At the time, it's Ifo. Mm-hmm. We were just thrown in the wilderness, like, hey, figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And what country was this in?
This is, it was right on the border of Kenya and Somalia.
Okay.
And, you know, UN, bless their heart, they did all they could. Mm-hmm. But we were just kind of, there you go, guys. Figure it out. Of course, we figured it out. But, you know, things like that. No surgeon. You know, I don't know what became of him. Mm-hmm. There was fighting that broke out, which spilled over from the events that have been popularized by that movie, Black Hawk Down. Mm-hmm. You know, mission didn't go as planned for the UN in Mogadishu. Now you have all these armed groups jostling for power. Mm-hmm. Some getting bold and crossing over to Kenya to get resources because they don't have any money, so they get mm-hmm. it from village folks who don't have weapons. Mm-hmm. And well, we were right there. Mm-hmm. So it got to a point where we had to leave the area and UN had to step in. So that's kind of been my unique experience, if you will. Mm-hmm. I always wanted, like, hey, what can we do to help out? Like, well, there's always fighting somewhere, you know?
Right.
Like, what the heck?
So, like, sorry to cut you.
No, go ahead.
So, from what I'm understanding, that experience of coming to America and kind of sitting with your experiences and wondering, like, where can I help out? What can I do in terms of conflicts with war and just people in general? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know about your background. You do have military experience and military service. Mm-hmm. Was this a motivator for you?
Oh, absolutely. That's all. I mean, going back to the time I was tortured for my puppy mm-hmm. in front of those kids and humiliated. Mm-hmm. I remember going outside. I didn't tell anyone. I was so upset. I was like, we're not having this anymore. This is enough. I'm not having this. Mm-hmm. So when we left Africa, it just so happened to be right after a little fighting happened. Mm-hmm. When we were in the U.S., I was like, man, it's nice here, but matter of fact, the fighting, I'll tell you about it real quick. Mm-hmm. It was the locals were hired to be gate guards. Mm-hmm. When you come in, and it was the second refugee camp that we got moved to because the first one got
And what was the name of that camp?
The Langata. I don't know if it's still around. Okay. Langata now is a name of a nice neighborhood. Kind of like where we live. So well, last time I went to Kenya, I went to go check it out. Yeah. I was like, what the? Yeah. I don't remember this.
Yeah.
So anyway, Langata, there'd be these gates. There's only like two gates you can enter from. And so the locals that were hired, you know, they were young and reckless, if you will. So they like to cheat the refugees. They take money, whatever, under the threat. They'll take documents. Once your documents are gone, that's a wrap. I mean, how do you prove you are who you are?
Mm-hmm.
This back then is hard now, so imagine. So, of course, they would concede. Sometimes they would, if a guy is walking with a female, be it daughter, wife, mother, whatever, they'd actually try and rape her.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes they would do it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that day just so happened, Baba was with Mama. And one of the guards tried it. So Baba took the biggest mag flashlights, those ancient relic mm-hmm. ones.
Mm-hmm.
Popped them right in the head. Got a bunch of the young guys. He's like, these guys are starting a conflict. Before you know it, the whole place erupted in fighting.
This was at the refugee camp?
Yeah, this is the second one. I still remember the training I had. I went and took the tent stake I'd been sharpening.
Uh-huh.
And we were in the tent. You were still little.
Yeah.
Guamar was young. He could walk, but he was still small.
Mm-hmm.
And Mama was out there too doing her thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in my head. I was like, if they come in here, I'm ready. Looking back, of course, a kick to the face, lights uh-huh. out. But, you know, yeah. That's what we were trained to do at the time. Next couple of days, actually, our names came up
mm-hmm.
to come to the States. And so as we were leaving, there was a formation of UN troops coming in. And they were... I want to say they were going to do a policing role. They didn't have military gear. Mm-hmm. They had the beret and like what would look like something an African policeman would wear in the office.
Okay.
You can Google search and you'll see mm-hmm. the uniform style.
Mm-hmm.
And they were marching in. And that moment still is in my head. I'm like, man, we're seriously going to leave again? There's like, right. Come on. Uh-huh. Like, U.S. is, I'm sure U.S. is nice. I heard great things, Streets of Gold, but... Dude, my cousin's here. One of my good friends, Ty Dog. He was like a mentor almost because he had completed all his child soldier training.
Mm-hmm.
And how they would do it is because, you know, children don't think like adults.
Mm-hmm.
You would have a mentor. He was my mentor. So he taught me all the ropes. Okay, this is how this group behaves. If an attack happens here, this is where you mm-hmm. find. Like, he taught me all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how to ambush Coca-Cola truck. Oh, it was, yeah, he one time he's like, all right, this is a schedule. We're gonna take over that truck. We're gonna drink some Coca-Cola and enjoy it. And we mm-hmm. did. That was mm-hmm. one of my favorite memories there at that time. So leaving them behind was heartbreaking because I was like, oh, my friend is there. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, can we wait 2 weeks?
Right, yeah. So
it was a relief, but it brought sadness. And of course, I ended up joining the military, which,
yeah,
it wasn't right. exactly the best idea. Not that there's anything sure. wrong with the military, but
mm-hmm.
you know, there was a few underlying, you know, traumatic events I did not address. I mean, even now mm-hmm. I almost broke down remembering one of my friends, you mm-hmm. know. So it didn't pan out. But so,
okay. yeah,
that was the feeling. It's like relief but sad.
Okay. So, just to wrap up this interview here, I wish we could go on.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we could probably talk some more after the interview is over.
If you got any
questions,
yeah.
What would you, if there is something that you want to share to mm-hmm. whoever is listening to this recording,
mm-hmm.
The audience, what would you say about war as a refugee, like as a whole, just rounding it out?
War, it's an unfortunate series of events that for one reason or another human beings have learned to either rely on or continue almost purely by tradition. It doesn't really have a good justification, and if you want to look into it more, why the actual technical aspects of it, look no further than the farewell address of President Eisenhower. the commander of the European theater in World War II. He will break it down in a way that you'll understand more than if it was coming from me as somebody who's a refugee who might sound like they've been, what is it, disheartened, disgruntled veteran. No. This guy explained exactly why these things have been outdated for a while. So that's what I would say about war. Our real strength that all human beings share is like, dude, we're human beings. We can create anything. We shoot. It's like, you want a strong God? Okay, let's think of one. You know, you know what I mean? You want automated robots? You got it, buddy. That's our strength. So war is unfortunately an event, a series of events we have, but everything in the end actually works out. So that is what I would say.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Is that, do people say that anymore?
I don't think so.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
It was refreshing. I actually needed that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with me.
You are welcome.
Hearing these stories of war from our family members and coming from you as well affects me in a way to where it's just like we need more peace in the world, and it also explains some of my own little quirks, you know, and our family dynamics and everything like that. I feel like sharing about these experiences helps us heal.
It does. As well. It does.
Helps us heal.
It does.
All right.
I'm going to go through memory lane. There's some memories I thought I addressed, but I guess not. So no worries.
All right.
Okay. What's self-care, right?
Self-care. Yeah, self-care. All right. Well, thank you so much.
You are welcome.
All right.